"I have been told about vultures," she said, her voice cold. Idaho had noted the perspiration on her upper lip. There was a spicy smell of sweat in the troop pressed close around them. His imagination was not equal to the task of defocusing the differences between the past and this time. The issue still suits they wore were more for show than for efficient collection of the body's water. No true Fremen would have trusted his life to one of them, not even here, where the air smelled of nearby water. And the fish speakers of Nayla's troop did not walk in Fremen silence. They chattered among themselves like children. Siona trudged beside him in sullen withdrawal, her attention frequently on the broad, muscular back of Nayla, who strode along a few paces ahead of the troop. What was between those two women? Idaho wondered. Nayla appeared devoted to Siona, hanging on Siona's every word, obeying every whim Siona uttered, except that Nayla would not deviate from the orders which brought them to Tuono village. Still, Nayla deferred to Siona and called her Commander. There was something deep between those two, something which aroused awe and fear in Nayla. They came at last to a slope which dropped down to the village and the wall behind it. From the air, Tuono had been a cluster of glittering rectangles just outside the shadow of the wall. From this close vantage, though, it had been reduced to a cluster of decaying huts made even more pitiful by attempts to decorate the place. Bits of shiny minerals and scraps of metal picked out scroll designs on the building walls. A tattered green banner fluttered from a metal pole atop the largest structure. A fitful breeze brought the smell of garbage and uncovered cesspools to Idaho's nostrils. The central street of the village extended out across the sparsely planted sand toward the troop, ending in a ragged edge of broken paving. A robed delegation waited near the building of the green flag, standing there expectantly with the fish speaker messenger Nayla had sent on ahead. Idaho counted 8 in the delegation, all men in what appeared to be authentic Fremen robes of dark brown. A green headband could be glimpsed beneath the hood on one of the delegation, the Naib, no doubt. Children waited to one side with flowers. Black-hooded women could be seen peering from side streets in the background. Idaho found the whole scene distressing.
"Let's get it over with," Siona said.
Nayla nodded and led the way down the slope onto the street. Siona and Idaho stayed a few paces behind her. The rest of the troop straggled along after them, silent now and peering around with undisguised curiosity. As Nayla neared the delegation, the one with the green headband stepped forward and bowed. He moved like an old man, but Idaho saw that he was not old, barely into his middle years, the cheeks smooth and unwrinkled, a stubby nose with no scars from breath-filter tubes, and the eyes. The eyes revealed definite pupils, not the all-blue of spice addiction. They were brown eyes. Brown eyes in a Fremen.
"I am Garun," the man said as Nayla stopped in front of him. "I am Naib of this place. I give you a Fremen welcome to Tuono."
Nayla gestured over her shoulder at Siona and Idaho, who had stopped just behind her.
"Are quarters prepared for your guests?"
"We Fremen are noted for our hospitality," Garun said. "All is ready."
Idaho sniffed at the sour smells and sounds of this place. He glanced through open windows of the flag-topped building on his right. The Atreides banner flying over that? The window opened into an auditorium with low ceiling, a bandshell at the far end enclosing a small platform. He saw rows of seats, maroon carpeting on the floor. It had all the look of a stage setting, a place to entertain tourists. The sound of shuffling feet brought Idaho's attention back to Garun. Children were pressing forward around the delegation, extending clumps of garish red flowers in their grimy hands. The flowers were wilted. Garun addressed himself to Siona, correctly identifying the gold piping of Fish Speaker Command in her uniform.
"Will you wish a performance of our Fremen rituals?" he asked. "The music, perhaps? The dance?"
Nayla accepted a bunch of flowers from one of the children, sniffed them, and sneezed. Another urchin extended flowers toward Siona, lifting a wide-eyed stare toward her. She accepted the flowers without looking at the child. Idaho merely waved the children aside as they approached him. They hesitated, staring up at him, then scurried around him toward the rest of the troop. Garun spoke to Idaho.
"If you give them a few coins, they will not bother you."
Idaho shuddered. Was this the training for Fremen children? Garun returned his attention to Siona. With Nayla listening, Garun began explaining the layout of his village. Idaho moved away from them down the street, noting how glances flicked toward him and then avoided his gaze. He felt deeply offended by the surface decorations on the buildings, none of it disguising the evidence of decay. He stared in an open doorway at the auditorium. There was a harshness in Tuono, a struggling something behind the wilting flowers and the servile tone of Garun's voice. In another time and on another planet, this would have been a docky in the street village, rope-belted peasants pressing forward with petitions. He could hear the whine of supplication in Garun's voice. These were not Fremen. These poor creatures lived on the margins, trying to retain parts of an ancient wholeness. And all the while, that lost reality slipped farther and farther from their grasp. What had Leto created here? These museum Fremen were lost to everything except a bare existence and the rote mouthing of old words which they did not understand and which they did not even pronounce correctly. Returning to Siona, Idaho bent to study the cut of Garun's brown robe, seeing a tightness in it dictated by a need to conserve fabric. The gray slick of a stillsuit could be seen underneath, exposed to sunlight which no real Fremen would ever have let touch his stillsuit that way. Idaho looked at the rest of the delegation, noting an identical parsimonious treatment of fabric. It betrayed their emotional bent. Such garments allowed no expansive gestures, no freedom of movement. The robes were tight and confining in the way of these entire people. Disgust propelling him, Idaho strode forward abruptly and parted Garun's robe to look at the stillsuit. Just as he suspected, the suit was another sham. No arms to it, no boot pumps. Garun pulled back, putting a hand to the knife hilt Idaho had exposed at the man's belt.
"Here, what are you doing?" Garun demanded, his voice querulous. "You don't touch a Fremen thus!"
"You a Fremen?" Idaho demanded.
"I lived with Fremen. I fought by their sides against Harkonnens. I died with Fremen. You, you're a sham!"
Garun's knuckles went white on the knife haft. He addressed himself to Siona.
"Who is this man?"
Nela spoke up. "This is Duncan Idaho."
"The Gola?"
Garun turned to look at Idaho's face.
"We have never seen your like here before."
Idaho felt himself almost overcome with desire to cleanse this place, even if it cost him his life, this diminished life which could be repeated endlessly by people who had no real concerns for him.
"An Oda model, yes."
But this was no Fremen.
"Draw that knife or take your hand off it,"
Idaho said. Garun jerked his hand away from the knife.
"It is not a real knife," he said, "only for decoration."
His voice became eager.
"But we have real knives, even kris knives. They are kept locked in the display cases to preserve them."
Idaho could not help himself. He threw his head back in laughter. Siona smiled, but Nela looked thoughtful, and the rest of the fish speaker troop drew into a close, watchful circle around them. The laughter had an odd effect on Garun. He lowered his head and clasped his hands tightly together, but not before Idaho saw them trembling. When Garun peered upward once more, it was to look at Idaho from beneath heavy brows. Idaho felt abruptly sobered. It was as though some terrible boot had crushed Garun's ego into fearful subservience. There was watchful waiting in the man's eyes, and for no reason he could explain, Idaho remembered a passage from the Orange Catholic Bible. He asked himself, "Are these the meek who will outwait us all and inherit the universe?" Garun cleared his throat, then,
"Perhaps the Gola Duncan Idaho will witness our ways and our ritual and judge them?"
Idaho felt shamed by the plaintive request. He spoke without thinking.
"I will teach you anything, Fremen, that I know."
He looked up to see Nela scowling at him.
"It will help to pass the time," he said, "and who knows, it may return something of the true Fremen to this land."
Siona said,
"We've no need to play old cultish games. Take us to our quarters."
Nela lowered her head in embarrassment and spoke without looking at Siona.
"Commander, there is a thing I have not ventured to tell you." "That you must make sure we stay in this filthy place," Siona said.
"Oh, no."
Nela looked up at Siona's face.
"Where could you go? The wall cannot be climbed, and there is only the river beyond it anyway. And in the other direction, it is the Sarir. Oh, no, it is something else."
Nela shook her head.
"Out with it!"
Siona snapped.
"I am under the strictest orders, Commander, which I dare not disobey."
Nela glanced at the other members of the troop, then back to Siona.
"You and the Duncan Idaho are to be quartered together."
"My father's orders?"
"Lady Commander, they are said to be the orders of the God Emperor himself, and we dare not disobey."
Siona looked full at Idaho.
"You will remember my warning, Duncan, when last we spoke at the Citadel?"
"'My hands are mine to do with as I wish,' Idaho snarled. "'I don't think you have any doubts about my wishes.'
She turned away from him after a curt nod and looked at Garun.
"'What does it matter where we bed in this disgusting place? Take us to our quarters.'
Idaho found Garun's response fascinating, a turning of the head toward the Gola, shielding the face behind the Fremen hood, then a secret conspiratorial wink. Only then did Garun lead them away down the dirty street.
"'What is the most immediate danger to my stewardship? I will tell you. It is a true visionary, a person who has stood in the presence of God with the full knowledge of where he stands. Visionary ecstasy releases energies which are like the energies of sex, uncaring for anything except creation. One act of creation can be much like another. Everything depends upon the vision.'
The stolen journals.